I kind of had a choice at that point.
Not just being patient with the process, but being grateful with the process.
And I'm like, man, I went to my dad straight after the game. I'm like, yo, like this shit can't happen anymore, man. I always find the, always try to take the good out of any negative situation.
You know, I have players coming in, Xavier, and they'd be like, you know, I played so bad. You know, sometimes I'd be like, hey, bro, hey, I don't know, we can't do nothing about that. I can tell you what we can do, we can get some work in right now.
Like, if you're not doing plyometrics, you're losing out on a lot of potential for performance.
My dad had these tapes of the Laker game. I got to a point where I said, you know, I want to play basketball. And I just always wanted to make sure I had the edge over people.
It became a part of me, you know, I didn't want anybody to get to be better than me.
All right, so today on the podcast, I have a special guest with me. He's my man, Dakota Keys Clark. Thank you for coming on today, man.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Yep. And for those who don't know, Dakota is actually a sports performance coach and facility director at Amped Performance in Scottsdale, Arizona. He's been training for 5 years in a variety of settings. This includes working with kids as young as six, up to high school, college, professional athletes, teams, general population, groups, anything, anybody you can think of. Dakota's worked with him. He's got great experience. It's crazy, kind of give like a little backstory. I actually been following Dakota for like about a year and some change mm-hmm. on IG. And it's actually funny. One day I posted something and he caught wind of it. He liked it. He kind of, you know, gave me some props. He's like, hey, man, this is a great post. And it was just the irony. It was just like, man, I've been following you for a while. I've been liking all your stuff, like, you right. know, taking some of your ideas. And then all of a sudden it kind of just came full circle. So
exactly.
I hit him up and was just like, hey, man, I'd love to collaborate with you on sometime. And coolest dude, really down to earth. And I'm glad we finally were able to get something going.
Absolutely.
So to kind of get the ball in your court a little bit, Dakota, like kind of tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you become a basketball and sports performance coach? And kind of like a little bit of background on yourself.
For sure, man. First and foremost, thank you for having me. Like you said, it's been a pleasure getting to know you these past couple months and just collaborate. And I think that's what it's all about. You know, just really mm-hmm. learning from each other and trying to utilize each other as resources and build each other up. And not necessarily mm-hmm. meet this competition per se, but just try to learn as much as we can from each other and try to spread that knowledge. So appreciate you having me on and keep up the good work. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, I guess for me, you know, how I got to this point really just began with my childhood and what my passions were from a young age. I grew up a huge basketball fan, and from probably second grade or so is when I started playing. You know, at that point, just understanding how complex the game was, how many things factored into being a good athlete, and, you know, really just taking your game to the next level and how much commitment that took. Was really intriguing for me at a age. Of course, I was watching basketball constantly and feel blessed to be, you know, growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s, where basketball was incredible. I'm sure you could attest to that as well.
yeah.
Kobe, Iverson, T-Mac, Steve Nash, Duncan, all these amazing players and how they transcended the game. So that's kind of what really drove my passion. So from there, you know, when I graduated high school, I had to make that decision of, you know, what I wanted to do. And of course, I think at 18, nobody truly knows exactly what they want to do, but, you know, you kind of test the waters and see what speaks to you and what things that you don't like. And so, you know, I kind of took my time with it, and that's exactly what I did is, you know, kind of tinkered around with different things, took business classes, took, sports journalism, I did a web design class, so it was kind of like all spectrums and just kind of saw certain mm-hmm. things. And, you know, if it was something that I really liked, I would take that. If it wasn't something I liked, then I would move on. And so ultimately it led to sports psychology and exercise science. And those were the two that kind of stood out for me. And so mm-hmm. When I went to ASU, I graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Exercise and Wellness. And really kind of understood that the sports psychology aspect, that side of it is, you know, heavily influenced in this field. My dad is a psychologist, and so I think his influence definitely played a part in you know, how I approach the mentality side of sports and just kind of tapping into that, you know, what we need to do to not only as athletes to prepare for the game and stress management and things of that sort, but as coaches to, you know, kind of dive deeper into understanding our clients better and what makes them motivated and what gets them, you know, up and ready for the next competition and driving them to their success. So, so anyway, from there, graduated, upon my graduation or the last semester of school, I did an internship and that led me to my first professional job. Gave me, you know, of course, direct access to athletes coming in the door. I didn't have to do a lot of outsourcing and marketing myself. Was extremely helpful at that age. And so, thankfully, you know, I was blessed to be able to be exposed to really good coaches, really good physical therapists that I work with. And, you know, the athletes that came in were awesome. You know, you go through your, you know, like I said, you know, 6 years old, athletes that don't really have much, and it's just building coordination and general strength. And then you have your, you know, college athletes and professional athletes and everything in between. So that gave me a really, really good base of knowledge and understanding for the field, and kind of led me to just, you know, start chasing my passion. And more and more I started training, more basketball players started coming in and started to get, you know, a little bit of exposure there and kind of just, yeah, man. So here I am, just kind of keep that trend going and hopefully keep building it.
Awesome, man. And I think it's that's pretty funny. You know, web design, like, that's actually, I think it's probably like the most, I won't say like off the wall, but it's kind of, you know, it's completely different, obviously, from like sports performance.
Oh, for sure. What's crazy is like, it was like, you know, speaking to my age a little bit, is looking back, it was like HTML, like going through the coding and everything. Like, it wasn't even as
advanced. Oh. So,
like, would I ever need that now? Probably not. It's already like done for you, but. Either way, it still was helpful.
Yeah, and it's crazy. I tell people all the time, like, hey, I didn't even, you know, they ask my undergrad, you know, not to take away from, you know, anything, interview or anything, but, you know, my undergrad was actually in, like, health sciences. Like, I was actually in school. I tell people to go, like, be a doctor, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, so it was, like, completely different, like, from what I'm learning. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, oh, man, I'm actually interested in this.
Right.
So I tell people all the time, as far as, you know, even if you don't really know what you're doing, like you said, like, or what you want to do at 18, it's okay. You know, you have your rest of your life to figure that out.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of things that that I've seen and that I experienced myself is coming out of high school. Like I said, you don't know exactly what you want to do. And initially I was like, you know, what's going to make me a lot of money and how much successful. And thankfully I have amazing parents that always kind of taught me the value of just chase what you're happy about, you know, make yourself chase your dreams and your goals, and don't necessarily worry about the money, because, you know, you could be in a job where you're making $1 million a year, but you're stressed out. And what kind of life is that, you know? And so just them stressing that importance led me to ultimately decide exactly, you know, basing what I want to do, you know?
Right, absolutely. It's that fulfillment. I think a lot of people miss that mark where they say, oh, like you said, they want to go after the money. And, you know, at the end of the day, in my opinion, personally, it depends on different people. But, you know, a lot of times people will not feel fulfilled with just having these things, you know, versus, you know, what it is that you're actually passionate about. And I try to preach that as much as possible. You know, it's like, it's very, that people look at it like, oh, well, you know, you're doing what you're passionate about. I'm like, well, yeah, obviously, why wouldn't you?
Yeah,
you know?
Right, exactly. Of course, you want to make money too. And that's just secondary to it, and there is ways to do that, but yeah, ultimately, like you said, the fulfillment is so important.
Right, absolutely. So what is the transition like, you know, going basically from a player and then going in into coaching? So was it kind of hard initially, like once you get done playing, like that last game of basketball where it's like, you know, you're not an athlete anymore? What was that kind of transition like mentally into going into coaching? Was there anything kind of, was it kind of hard, or was it more of a simple, you know, kind of like, oh, I love this more, let's go into this?
For sure. Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It's one of those things where as you start to age, and, you know, from a young age, of course, I think everyone's goal, at least from a basketball standpoint, is I'm going to make the NBA. You know, I'm going
to <Right. off.
laughs> I'm going to find a way to make it. I don't care if I'm 6 feet, white dude, I'm going to make it. So obviously, as you continue to go and realize that, you know, this is extremely difficult, not only from a skill development standpoint, but from a genetic standpoint as well.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I started to realize that and kind of was just honest with myself, I knew that I wanted to do something associated with either training or basketball or exercise. But it's tough because, you know, after you play in high school, you know, you love the game so much and it's
mm-hmm.
you know, you're training and everything and you have a purpose behind it, right? So it's like, you know, you have the season coming up, you look at your past years and you kind of pick apart what things you need to get better at. And then you mm-hmm. get in the lab and you go for it. And so when that's gone and you know that you're not competing per se for a team, it's definitely difficult. And I think initially for me, it was just kind of like, damn, like now what, you know?
Right.
You know, you mature quickly. And for me, you know, straight out of high school, I moved from Flagstaff, Arizona down to Phoenix and mm-hmm. started college. And I was working part-time, almost full-time. And so I was kind of paying my way through school, and your priorities and your responsibilities change dramatically depending
right.
on what situation you're in. And so for me, it was like, you know, I still trained. I still played pickup basketball. It wasn't the same, of course, but mm-hmm. I think the motivation wasn't necessarily there as much because of the increase in responsibilities on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like I said, I still trained. I just think the goals weren't quite the same, and the more and more I learned, I'd say probably like my last semester of ASU my degree and the end of my internship is where I really began to kind of start training again with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I would always kind of maintain and stuff, but I think understanding more of how to strategize your goals and how to get to them kind of mm-hmm. jumped a little bit more. And so at that point, I think is where I started to kind of regain that motivation I once had and really start working on my game again. I always wanted to dunk and I never did in high school, and it took me mm-hmm. all the way to when I was 24 years old, which is crazy. But shows you the, you know, commitment that I had to it. And so I just worked my ass off from that standpoint and then kind of watch it grow. But what's crazy is that, and you probably know this too, as trainers, hours can be crazy. And so, especially when you're
right.
new. And so when I first started, there was, you know, still to this day, there's times, but where I would start at 6 a.m. and I wouldn't get home until, you know, 7, 8 at night. And then of course you got to eat, prepare for the next day, spend time with your girlfriend, significant others.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point you have to prioritize your schedule and see what's most important. And, you know, you want to lead by example and get your training sessions in. Sometimes it's
right.
not possible. But thankfully now it's a little bit slower in the summers because of crazy heat here in Phoenix. So I've been playing three times a week at least, which has been awesome. And mm-hmm. So that's been really cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, as a trainer, as a coach, you'll have those times where it's just like, hey, I got to get 10 pushups in and that's it. You got to get that minimum dose.
Exactly. Or just like jumping in sets with clients. Like I would do that all the time where even if it was
yes.
just one set or like, here, let me demonstrate like this whole plyo set, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Just those little things I think definitely add up. So better
than yeah, better. It's definitely better than nothing. So actually one thing I want to ask you is, you know, you being, you know, the facility director and things like that,
mm-hmm.
Kind of take me through like a day. You kind of touched on it a little bit where you kind of go in at 6, may not get home till 7 sometimes.
Sure.
What's an average day in the life of Dakota?
Sure. And good question. And it has changed. I was with a company for three and a half years. And then I actually just made a transition to this new company, Amped Performance. And so I've only been here for about 3.5 months now. And so my mm-hmm. day has changed a little bit from job to job. But ultimately, you know, a typical day would be, you know, waking up early, getting in 6, 7 a.m., depending on whether I have clients at that time or not, you know, try to just get my day started as far as getting my programming done, understanding the flow of the day, when I have my breaks, mm-hmm. and just getting in the trenches. So getting those sessions in, taking advantage of my downtime, whether it's studying or training, playing around with ideas, you know, try to just make a game plan for each day to make sure that you, you know, get everything you want to get done and get accomplished. And, and another thing is, as you probably know too, as a professional in the field, is that days can change like very quickly. Like somebody can tell, hey, I can't come in today. Can I reschedule for tomorrow or vice versa or something? I just got a break. Can I come in? And so you have to be very adaptable in this field to where, even if you're not 100% like prepared for the situation, to just make it happen and kind of just run with it. And so I think that's kind of what I've learned a lot, is just that ability to adapt quickly, change things on the fly, and, you know, be prepared for those situations.
Right. Absolutely. That's a big thing. I think a lot of now what I wasn't prepared for getting in the field is that it doesn't matter if you have the perfect program. It doesn't matter if you have, you know, the entire session planned out, your entire day planned out. If you go in and something goes completely different than, you know, what you expected, how do you react to that? And I think a lot of times as young coaches, young trainers, we don't really understand that, yes, it's cool to have these you know, these plans, these ideas, but more than anything, we have to be able to adapt on the fly.
Yes.
And it's, I've seen a lot of times where people have, you know, they can't think on their feet quick enough. And, you know, the entire session just kind of goes downhill from that. So
true.
Definitely a big one for anyone listening to this. Learn how to be adaptable and understand that the only constant is change, right?
Exactly, man. Yep.
So kind of switch gears a little bit. What's the process like? So let's say you get a brand new basketball player walks in, right? They want you to train them. What's your process like when you get a new player? You don't have to spill the entire secrets. I don't want all the sauce, but what's the general kind of idea as far as getting a new player and building a program for them?
Yeah, for sure. So it kind of depends on my situation. I was lucky to work. My first job was in a physical therapy setting where they had, you know, 22 locations, I think, was across Phoenix, and 8 of those locations had what was called FAST. And FAST was Foothills Acceleration and Sports Training. Name doesn't really matter, but the point is it was like a sister company, and they did sports performance training along with like post-rehabilitation training. So a lot of our clients that came in and athletes that came in, some were off the street, but a lot of them came from next door, which was in physical therapy. That process is probably a little bit different than a lot of people are used to, just because, you know, they're either rehabbing an injury or coming in for, you know, some dry needling or whatever the case may be. And we had a direct resource to them, which was great for marketing and a good business model. But it was a little bit different because we would have a conversation with the physical therapist of, you know, what their limitations are, you know, what they've been responding well to, what exercises they've been working on, and ultimately where they want to be. And so a lot of the times you would get a lot of insight, kind of like from an assessment standpoint from the therapist themselves. So that's a little different. But I guess in most cases, kind of what you're saying, is, you know, a new player comes in the door. I think the number one thing that's most important that a lot of people ignore or overlook is just building a connection, you know, understand who they are as a person, where they're at in their life. Because I'm sure you may have seen this too, where it's like you get these young athletes that come in. Sometimes it's their parents that are just driving. Hey, they need to do this every day. They need to stay productive. And you would hope that most of the time the athlete is on board, but sometimes they're not. So I think the number one thing is just establishing that connection first and foremost, and just you know, building that buy-in. You know, where I work now, we definitely pride ourselves on the assessment process, which for us, it incorporates a movement efficiency screen and then a range of motion assessment. And so it's pretty intuitive. I mean, it goes into I think it's like 20 locations of ranges of motion for like 20 different joints. And so that really down like where the stress is being placed at each joint, and gives you a more like clear understanding of the individual restrictions and limitations that somebody has. So during that process, you can get to know them, right? So like you ask the questions of what their goals are and what their past experiences are like while you're collecting this information. And then from there, you kind of just pinpoint, you know, one, where they're at in their season or off season, what their goals are, you know, what things I like and don't like. And then from there, you just start building and understanding how many days a week you're going to see them, what their schedule looks like so that you're not, you know, conflicting with their practice schedule and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think just assessing and reassessing is extremely important. And yeah, so that's kind of the process I go through. But again, my situation is a little bit different working in the PT set.
Right. And I love the fact that you said, you know, get that connection. I think a lot of times, you know, especially when I first got into it, I had coaches yell at me, literally yell at me because, you know, I kind of came in through an internship and they're like, all right, well, I want you to deal with this athlete. You've never met them before. How are you going to deal with them?
Yeah.
And then immediately I was going over like, hey, here's the session. Here's what we're doing. And after the session, the coach comes up. He's like, hey, do you even know like what's his name, like his or her name? I say their name. What are they studying? I'm like, what? Why would I know that? And basically just sitting me down and explaining, hey, look, at the end of the day, it's the relationships that we're building and, you know, the connections that we're building that we're really going to make the difference, right? Because at the end of the day, like you said, getting that buy-in, but I think it goes both ways too, you know, like me buying into them as well, because they're human beings. They're not robots. They're not just going to come in here and do everything I say and just go home and have no emotions, no feelings.
Exactly.
There are a lot of stresses outside, you know, that are going on that we may not be keen to that can affect their session. So maybe they had a bad day. Maybe they had they did poorly on a test. Something happened with their family.
Absolutely.
And they're coming in, and then now all of a sudden they're in the session. The session's not going the way I expect it to.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden I'm gonna yell at this athlete or whatever and be upset. And at the end of the day, I didn't even ask how their day was.
Right.
And it's like there's so many factors that go into it. Like at the end of the day, training is such a small part of what we do.
Yep.
You know, at the end of the day, we're still coaches. Right. And to be a coach, I think you have to understand that human aspect of it. I think a lot of times we miss that, especially when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And even some coaches, I think we still miss that.
It's true, man. And it's not easy. You know, a lot of people will open up with you and a lot of people won't. And you have to find ways to understand who they are and kind of pick apart and peel those layers back and understand, like you said, like we don't know what their stresses are outside and whether or not they're willing mm-hmm. to know that. We have to be, you know, critically thinking and analyzing constantly and recognizing mm-hmm. body language. You know, that's a big thing that I've noticed is I've had some youth athletes come in and whether they're doing a lot of tests that week or, you know, they're in a fight with their girlfriend, whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. you notice that energy change day to day. And you have to kind of know that even if they're not ready to talk about it, like you ask them like, hey, how you feeling today? And you can tell something's off, but they say, oh no, I'm good. yeah. You have to kind of like, you know, that's your responsibility to know, okay, maybe I should dial back a little bit today. And, you know, maybe they're dealing with a lot of stress and maybe we should just do some more recovery based stuff or whatever the case is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge, huge thing that a lot of coaches need to understand.
Yeah. I love what you said about body language too. That's one thing I'm starting to understand is sometimes, you know, I'll be working with someone and just based off just, you know, just the normal everyday interactions we have, I kind of get like a baseline of like their personality, like their outgoing, this, that, and the other.
Yep.
So when it comes time, it's like, you know, hey, what's up, man? Like give the fist bump. It's just a head nod.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what, you know, what's going on? You know, I ask them like, hey, everything okay, man? Yeah, man, I'm good. And so, you know, obviously, like you said, it's your responsibility. So, you know, you kind of, maybe I don't ask, are you sure? You know, I kind of go around like, hey, man, how, like, you know, what'd you do today? Things like that, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden I find out they didn't eat today.
Exactly.
So I'm like, and it's like, well, like I would have never gotten that if I would just, all right, cool, let's jump in the session. I instantly knew something was wrong. And I was just like, hey, man, you know, how was your day? Like asking deeper questions has been so big for me.
Yep.
You know, instead of just like the initial, oh, how was your day? Good. Boom. End of conversation.
Exactly.
You didn't learn anything.
Yeah. Right. And I'm guilty of that too. I've made that mistake early on is, mm-hmm. you know, you ask those questions or you just kind of overlook something if they're like, oh, no, I'm good. And then, you know, later you find out where it's towards the end of the session and they're like, yeah, like you say, like, I haven't eaten today or, you know, I just failed a test or whatever the case is. And you're like, mm-hmm. yeah, I should have altered things. You know, I should have known. So you learn from those experiences. But I think, yeah, like you said, body language is really important to kind of analyze and look at.
Right. Staying on communication,
mm-hmm.
What do you feel like were some tips or some things you've learned from other coaches or even just, you know, their athletes and experience that have helped you learn how to communicate more effectively with the athletes, you know, just for anyone that's listening, because like we said, it's so important, but I think we can over communicate, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like that would be better than versus thinking where we communicate enough. And oftentimes that's not the case. So maybe what are some experiences, you don't have to be specific, but
sure,
that have helped you come up with maybe some tips or some things you can think of as far as like communicating and getting that connection with those athletes.
For sure. I've been fortunate to, you know, in my first place that I worked, I worked with three other trainers. And so mm-hmm. everybody has their own style and personality. And so you kind of learn certain traits that work well with your style and things that don't. Like I said, I was thankful to work with a lot of different coaches and understand how they communicate. Some people are very like, you know, they don't necessarily talk a lot, but they ask the right question. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen the opposite side where people like don't stop talking and sometimes hinder things. But I think from a communication standpoint, just, you know, understanding who that person is and, knowing that, you know, even if they may not be talkative, trying to get context from other things, and just kind of checking in on them as you go and seeing like, hey, did that feel okay? Or, you know, what do you think that felt like? Or how do you think you could adapt this? And really getting like feedback from them, I think is really important because, you know, we could try something out on one athlete, that worked really well for other people. And we could try something that, you know, may not work well for other people too. And so I think just, getting feedback is one important thing for sure. Something I learned early on too, as far as like communication for cueing, especially for youth athletes, it's like you could cue somebody all day. And I do think it's important to get hands-on and let them understand what you want. But I think there is such thing as over cueing and talking too much.
Right.
You know, so it's like, I remember, I was coaching like the sports performance session. We had, probably like five or six athletes come in. So I'm leading them through it. And this is probably within my first couple of weeks and doing like landing mechanics. And I'm like, you know, don't let your knee cave in or land soft. Or I just kept going through it. And every single time I'm analyzing, I'm looking back on it and I'm like, I just did not stop talking. Like, let them figure it out themselves. And maybe, you know, if something looks dangerous, of course, like if their knees are caving in, yeah, of course, address that. But give them one cue at a time, let them master it. Don't go overboard and just kind of let them naturally figure it out because nothing's going to be perfect anyway. But kind of just one step at a time. So I think that's another important piece to communication, or I guess not speaking as much as you may think you should.
Right. An effective part of coaching is to take a step back and don't overcoach. That's a real thing. I don't think a lot of people realize. And I was actually reading an article about it the other day, and it's just, you know, there's a couple of different factors, but you know, a big thing is that pursuit of a perfect training session or perfect form.
Right.
It's like, especially when you have a novice athlete or someone who's new, maybe someone not as experienced, it's gonna look ugly.
Yeah.
At first, but that's how they learn, right? That you're gonna have to learn being like, okay, this is how it looks. They need to go and understand their body, need to understand how it's going to feel, and it's going to clean up over time. But I just think it just comes from, you know, oh, we just need to be perfectionists. It needs to be perfect. But like you said, if it's safe, as long as it's safe, okay, it's going to suck at first, and that's fine.
Exactly.
But over time, that's, we just need to make sure we're building that foundation of movement patterns. That way, over time, they can improve, and then we can get as close to perfection as possible.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of times too, what I've realized is sometimes the less cueing, the better. And when somebody is very intuitive with their body, or they overthink some things, and I've done the same thing where I'm like, okay, like whatever the case is, whatever exercise I'm doing, like, I'm like, okay, focus on this, focus on that, focus on this. And I'm like, wait, no, just do it, you know, like use your body and just go out there and do it. And so I've seen that in my athletes where instead of me saying, okay, keep your chest up and then stay on your heels and then do this, it's like, hey, just do this motion, see how it feels. And then sometimes even getting their feedback of like, what did you feel? Well, I felt like I was on my toes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what should you do? Maybe sit back on my heels. Yep. So it's like they figure it out. And that saves a lot of that thinking process that sometimes slows us down.
Right. It's like you're keeping them engaged throughout the process. It becomes more of them figuring it out versus you just kind of telling them, okay.
Exactly. Yep.
All right. So speaking of that, we kind of touched on it a little bit, but what do you feel like are some common mistakes that, you know, trainers may make or coaches may make whenever they do get some athletes? Like, what do you feel like are some common things you feel like are just kind of like, well, I don't know why you're doing that.
For sure. You know, everything comes with context for sure. And there probably is a long list of things that people do wrong. And I'm sure I've been there too. I think some of the things I see, one, going too heavy, the tendency to go too heavy on lifts.
Right.
I see that a lot. And it's like, it's just not worth it, man. I'd rather have somebody do perfect body weight squats and master their body weight instead of getting them under 225 pounds of load. You know, it's like,
right,
so many people are chasing numbers. And I get it, you know, if you're a bodybuilder and you're doing a competition or something like that, like, I get there's structured ways to get there. But I think going too heavy is one thing I see. I guess another one is like high volume plyometrics. Like, people have asked me too, like, even hit me up, like, direct message me and ask, like, so, you know, I play basketball however many times a week, and then I do plyometric sessions, you know, 4 times a week.
Oh, but, Lord.
Oh my God. It's cringe, because it kind of sucks, because sometimes they're just, you know, it's simple, just ignorance, and they really do want to get better, and they have that work ethic, but they're doing the wrong things. So those instances are like, man. And so it's good to be able to help people like that. And then the last thing I was going to say is something that you and I have touched base on a lot, is just the lack of understanding of recovery. And just kind of like blindly going out, not thinking about, you know, the other side of it, as far as sleeping, getting your hydration, and eating good, and stress management, and surrounding yourself with positive people. Those things probably carry a lot more weight than getting under a heavy back squat, you know? So those are just a
few. Right.
But yeah, man, it's all over the place. And I think just, yeah, you gotta just be careful and be cautious.
Yeah. Especially with social media becoming so big, there's so much like information being spread. And, you know, oftentimes, like you said, context is important. But sometimes there's just instances where you just see something and it's just like, ah, that's not, why are you doing that? Especially in the instance of recovery. Like, I mean, we spoke about this. We have our posts out and we're doing our series. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think a lot of people understand, especially athletes, because like they're always on 100. They're always trying to get in the gym. They're always trying to grind.
Right.
So I tell them, like, recovery is part of the training program, and it's more the most important part, just because, you know, that's where we're gonna get the adaptations. Like, obviously, the stressing, we're only going to have that for about an hour, maybe an hour and a half, in the weight room. And then obviously you'll have practice and stuff like that. But it's the recovery. Like you say, like, if we're not, you know, getting a proper diet, proper nutrition, hydrating, sleeping, managing our stress, we're just conflicting stress instead of complementing it. Exactly. And over time, like, that's going to lead to overtraining, and that's going to lead to real, real issues.
Yep.
And down the line, that could easily become, you know, something that's chronic or even acute if you go too hard too soon.
Yep.
And I just don't think players really understand that. I think coaches understand it, but I don't know how much they really kind of buy into it. Right? They're like, oh, well, they have games to win. I understand that. But at the same time, it's like, hey, that the athletes, you know, they have their own things that they need to kind of take care of.
For sure. And it's tough, like, in the situation I was in early in my career is, we had those sports performance classes where it was like a designated time slot where any athlete could come in, and it was tough because early on, you may see somebody progressing very quickly and expect others to progress at the same rate. And if I'm like, initially for me, I'm like, you know, come on, like, let's go, like, keep up. But then it's like, you know, everyone's different. And so I think progressing too early and introducing like these high level things to these young athletes is just, come back even further, and you might not see anything bad out of it for years, but like you said, those acute injuries lead to those chronic cases or lead to that wear and tear down the road. And I think just focusing on the basics is so key, and something that, you know, it's simple, and it's like, okay, why are we doing the goblet squat again? Why are we doing a drop squat again? And it's like, you have to master the basics, and it's, you can never you know, not get better at those things. So definitely,
right?
Yeah,
a big thing about, especially like you talk about the basics, you know, there's so many Kobe Bryant stories. Like, you talked about this a little earlier too, but Kobe Bryant literally had training sessions where people were bored to watch him because he would shoot the same exact shots over and over for hours.
Precisely.
Because he wanted to master, you know, something like so simple as like a bank shot, like from the block.
Yep.
It's like, that's the most basic shot. Oh, where's the turnaround that he does in game? But he's a master at his craft because he mastered the basics.
Exactly.
And I always think back that sometimes when I'm kind of reading something, I'm just like, oh, I don't need to read this. I know this. But then I kind of think, oh, well, what would Kobe do? Like, Kobe would be boring. You know, saying? Kobe would be boring, but boring
works. Of my life.
So what would Kobe do?
Yep.
Bro, I swear, like, I just watched his interview too, and I bought in even more to his philosophy. He's one of my favorite players too, but yeah. Now it's just like, oh, okay, damn, Kobe, yeah, he really did the basics that much. Right. But like you said, they're the foundation of everything you do. So learning the proper movement, like even simple as goblet squats. It's funny because I actually had an athlete ask me that the other day.
Really?
They're like, hey, are we ever gonna back squat? And I'm talking to her and she has like a powerlifting background. So I'm telling her, hey, look, everyone else doesn't have your background. This is the first time like a couple of these ladies in here have touched the weight. So I can't really, you know, I can't just put a bar on their back, you know, like at that point they're just gonna die under the bar and that's the last thing we want.
Exactly.
So I have to make sure I treat everyone from a level zero. And then if I see one is progressing, okay, maybe we can make this workout a little bit more specific for you, progress you a little bit, but I have to make sure everyone has the foundation first. And it's funny that you said it because I just thought about that. Like, oh yeah, I did get asked that the other day.
It's true. And you got to like put your ego out the door because there's times where you might get those complaints of like, wow, we're doing this again or whatever. But just
understanding
that, yes, you can add variety, of course. And yes, you can switch things up from time to time and progress and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to stick to your values and what you know is going to work. Because that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if they're like, oh, this is boring. It's like, okay, but
mm-hmm.
it's getting you to your goal. Right. So just understanding,
right.
As long as you can relate it back to them getting to where they want to go. I think a lot of the times if you channel that message that they'll be like, okay, you're right. So just got to kind of stick to your guns on it.
Right. Boring works. I'm going to start writing that everywhere.
Boring works.
So, in terms of, let's talk a little bit more about the film session. So, like you were talking about evaluating and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend for anyone who's not really kind of privy to like the sports performance?
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to watching like evaluations of how players move, because, you know, we're really big on biomechanics and moving properly.
Yeah.
What do you think athletes should be more aware of in terms of like if they're watching their film or, you know, someone sitting with them watching film,
yeah.
What should they be looking at so they know how they're moving properly and in cases if they're doing anything dangerous?
That's a good point, man. I think, you know, it kind of depends on what you have access to. Of course, like if we're talking about
mm-hmm.
a high school or college setting, like there's recorded games and stuff like that. So you can pick apart
mm-hmm.
game specific situations and how you move independently.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't have that access, or if you're not on a team, like you just have to kind of use what you can. I'm mm-hmm. a big fan of recording some of my sessions, just certain aspects of it. And there's so much you can pick apart. And even if you don't know exactly like how to pick it apart, getting with a coach who does, it's so valuable
mm-hmm.
to see that. Even if you're training yourself, like there's been times where, you know, something doesn't feel right for me. And so I'll put a camera up and I'll do a session or I'll do whatever it is, jumping or whatever it is, and just kind of pick apart what my movement looks like with a slower time frame, right? So whether it's just mm-hmm. slowing that film down and literally just like going through it very, very slowly and seeing at what point do I compensate, at what point
mm-hmm.
am I maybe lacking or losing energy. Just those little things I think are very important. Obviously alignment and like you said, biomechanics is huge and nothing's
mm-hmm.
perfect, but something as simple as just watching yourself do a landing from a jump or doing like a lateral mm-hmm. shuffle and then switching and seeing how you switch or if your body switch
mm-hmm.
Or lags and has that, you know, lateral flexion, like those little things you can pick apart and see. And if you see that consistently, you can kind of pick apart, okay, this is what we need to work on. And just showing it to an athlete. There's so many times that I've cued somebody, you know, whether it's like a sprinting mechanic drill, a mm-hmm. landing mechanic drill, and I tell them one thing and they just, you know, whether they are listening, actively listening or not, they just don't do what I say. And I'm like, okay, here, I'm gonna take a video, just do the same exact thing. And so they do it. And then I show them and I'm like, okay, what did you do wrong or what do you think you can improve? So many times that next rep that they do is so much cleaner. And it's like, damn, just showing something is a lot more effective than me cueing them to death for an hour. And so I guess that's not necessarily details of how you pick apart film, but I guess that's kind of how I approach it. And I think that goes a long way. But yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, no. I was I asked because that more now than ever, people ask me questions, and so it gets to the point like you do get the DMs, and you can't see unless obviously you're there or they send you film. So I just say, just send me a video of you doing something. All right, whatever it is that you want me to do. And so like once I get that film, I can actually sit down and critique. But then what I try to do is I try to teach them, hey, this is what you should look for whenever you're doing this. Right. Continue to film yourself. That's perfect. And that way you can get that feedback. You don't have to have another coach. You have your own set of eyes. Mm-hmm. And there's oftentimes, and there's information out there, like research that basically shows that, like you said, that's perfect. What you do is that you show them, hey, what could you improve? Because now there's that active engagement in the coaching aspect of it. So now they're learning through kind of coaching themselves. Oh, you said to do this. I didn't do X, Y, and Z. I need to do this. Yep. And they're getting that feedback, and it's not necessarily coming from you. It's coming from themselves. So now it's almost like that accountability aspect. So now they're actually going to do whatever it is you ask.
Exactly. I think that's huge, is that accountability factor. And just, it's one thing if you tell them to do something, do it, but them seeing it wrong and understanding that it could lead to, whether it's an injury or whether it's getting blown by or getting embarrassed by the person you're guarding, whatever it is, it's like once you put that accountability on them and they see it and they understand why, I think it helps just with that buy-in and them really focusing on it. And so that goes a long way. And then on top of that, of course, just like from an assessment standpoint, like I said, we go through a movement efficiency, and sometimes I don't have, or like I'll have like an online client, and just like you said, you can simply get them on a FaceTime call or have them record themselves do an overhead squat or a single leg squat. Several little like basic things you can do, and immediately you can see compensations and things that they can start to look for.
Absolutely, man. So last question, because I know you're a busy man. Don't want to take away from your break time.
No problem.
So what are some resources that trainers or players can use to kind of learn so that way they can kind of get to a position where you are, people that are aspiring to be coaches, trainers, or players that just want to have a little bit more information? What are some resources that you would start off someone who's from a ground zero level?
For sure. I think one of the most important things that I've learned is utilize your resources around you. I think obviously reading and watching videos and stuff like that is important. But that's one small aspect of it. I think, understanding who your mentors are, and it doesn't have to be necessarily even in the field. Like it could be literally having a conversation with your dad or your mom or a high school coach, and just asking them questions. Like, don't be afraid to ask questions. I think early on in my career, I was afraid to ask questions sometimes, whether I thought it was stupid or that it had already been answered or whatever the case is like, don't be afraid to ask those questions, because even if you feel stupid at asking it, once it's answered, then you're good. Like, you're never going to have that question again. I think just utilize the resources close to you first. Take advantage of that. Take somebody out to dinner and pick their brain. Those things go much further, I think, than just sitting down and reading out of a textbook. I think just seeing who the most successful people are in your field and your mentors, see what they put out. If they have a book, go podcast. Those little things definitely help. Something that I've introduced to my routine to give myself a little bit more self-education. I drive like 30 minutes to work every day and 30 minutes back. And I know for a lot of people like out in LA and stuff, they're like, dude, that's nothing. but quite honestly, I enjoy it because I've been listening to podcasts. And so even if it's 30 minutes, both ways, like an hour every day, I'm getting in something that I didn't learn before. So I think that's definitely big. And then just looking at like the leaders in our industry, the Mike Boyles, the, Brett Bartholomew, PKF Performance, of course, like all these guys are very knowledgeable. Take advantage of the free resources that they give you. and invest in the ones that they're selling, because clearly it's working for a reason. So utilize that. If you want to become a trainer, obviously you can get your certifications, certified personal training, CSES, corrective exercise specialist. All those are good. Of course, getting a college degree is important. I don't think it's 100% necessary, but I think it's a good route to go. So I think all those things definitely add into just building a base of understanding.
That's beautiful, man. I like the fact that you said, go talk to people.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times, you know, new coaches or trainers will just think, oh, I'm just going to bury my nose in these notebooks. I'm like, that's cool. Yeah. But there's so much information. There's so much experience that you're not getting from that textbook that you can get from someone who's actually been through the trenches and has that wisdom.
Exactly.
That's the number one thing that I learned, is that I was the guy that was always reading the textbook. So finally, when I started talking to coaches, they're like, no, I don't do anything in that textbook.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? I just spent all this time studying for this, and all of a sudden I found out this is completely almost useless.
It's so true. And in this field, as you know, too, it's like there's things that are constantly changing and new coming out daily. And so something you may have read in college may have changed already. And so staying up to date with things, but like you said, like just getting to know somebody and ask certain questions, they may be like, no, that's the wrong way to do things. In my experience, I'm this way. And whether or not they're right or wrong, it gives you insight on, you know, what you can do. And, you know, for me, I'm a big kinesthetic learner. I learn by doing things, getting benches and messing around with different ideas and trying things on myself. So I think just, you know, utilize those who are around you and get in the trenches and do some work. And that'll go a long way for sure.
Absolutely, man. So thanks, man. Appreciate you so much. To wrap it up, where can people find you? Social media, Twitter, YouTube. Where can people find Dakota to learn more about sports performance?
Definitely, man. I appreciate you. I think the number one place is Instagram. That's where I'm always at. @_DK_performance. I've been posting a lot recently, and so I think that's probably the main resource. And then, you know, feel free to direct message me, email me. I'm always open to sharing my thoughts and ideas. And, you know, in the works of, I have a Twitter, but I don't really use it that much. So I'm kind of flirting with ideas to keep that going and, you know, increase the avenues of where people can find me. So stay tuned for that too.
Absolutely, man. So I'm going to definitely put your handle in the description, that way people can find it just in case they mistype it or whatever, they misheard you. But thank you so much, Dakota. Thank you for your time. Appreciate you coming out here, spitting some knowledge, spitting some wisdom, and look forward to getting together with you again, man. We got some stuff in the works. I'm excited for it.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me, and keep doing what you're doing. You know, you can see that passion inside you, so that goes a long way. A lot of people that are listening, you know, keep that passion, chase that passion, and, you know, do what you love. And like I said, just look forward to doing more with you, man. Appreciate you.
Absolutely, man. Until next time, man.
All right. Take care.
And that's a wrap.
Thank you for listening to the Basketball and Barbells podcast. I really hope you all got major value from today's episode. Please leave a rating and review of the show, and don't forget to tune into the next episode.